Hey there, Pounders. It's JRW, and I've got Seema here with me tonight. And we're bringing you a fifth of Spurs. We will be discussing, analyzing, dissecting, and enjoying the first 20% of the season for the San Antonio Spurs, starting with the opening tip-off and ending at 4 minutes and 48 seconds remaining in the second quarter of the game that the Spurs just played against the Golden State Warriors. That is our format. We're handling a fifth of Spurs, 20% of the Spurs season tonight.
Yeah, please explain why, and maybe not even explain, but convince me that this is nothing more than just a byproduct of your infatuation with the number five.
Well, I do love the number five, but I don't see how this plays at all, except, you know, fifth happens to be one-fifth of the season. So right. So I guess that it's in there, you know, whether I was thinking about it or not. But, no, we've got the NBA season doesn't break up. Those 82 games don't break up in anything but halves. You know, when you see a quarter season review or whatever, it's all contrived because those games don't break up. You can't divide 82 evenly by four.
Well, because it's so clean to break a game like tonight's game and stop at 448.
If you're going to choose an arbitrary number, I say there's no better number to choose than the number five.
As opposed to, say, the number 50% or something along those lines.
If you want to wait another few weeks before we analyze the season, then I suppose we can just end the call right now. I say let's do it.
Absolutely.
Let's
not
present a fifth of Spurs. Let's look at the first 20% of the season, and we will look at it. So, but the rule has to be at this point that we can only discuss, analyze, dissect, and enjoy the first 1,728 game seconds of tonight's contest. We can't discuss anything that happened after 4 minutes and 48 seconds left in the second quarter.
Does that rule preclude me discussing the fact that the ancient fossilized remains of the greatest power forward to ever walk the planet notched his first triple-double of the season tonight?
You can ask that question and you can mention it, but we can't analyze, dissect, enjoy that moment until the next fifth of Spurs that we present in the coming weeks, because it's off topic.
What about Richard Jefferson's barebacking of David Lee tonight in the game? Did that occur previous to the 20% break, or was that was that in the second 20%?
So we're talking about a fifth of Spurs tonight, the first 20%. I think this is officially the longest intro in podcast history.
It is, and welcome to the podcast tonight, Dale. We wanted to get into discussing the state of the Spurs in the first 20%, and I want to know just briefly, what is your overall impression of the first 20%? Technically, 17 games played in the second 20%. We've covered that. 16 games played, and we are 14-2. What are your thoughts on the state of the year?
I like it. I'm pro Spurs right now. I could not be more excited about this season if I tried, and I think I have actually twice, and both times I couldn't get more excited because I was already maxed out.
Beyond the obvious excitement of a 14-2 record, best start in the league, and best start that we've seen in quite some time, the only still undefeated team on the road. What is it that excites you most about what you see on the court?
Well, like we talked about off the recording, and like we were chatting about watching the first quarter and 5 minutes 12 seconds, 6 minutes 7 minutes 12 seconds of the second quarter, it right. just looked like they're out there toying with teams.
Yeah.
I think the metaphor you used was like a cat playing with a ball of yarn. I don't think that they ever made it out of third gear tonight. They spent most of the game in second gear, just kind of pacing themselves and building a 20-point lead. Yeah, there was a 20-point lead that we can't discuss because it didn't happen until the second fifth of the season, but this has been going on throughout the entire season. It's the way that they played against the Cavaliers. The idea is that against other professional teams, their best is not required. It's on call.
Right. We discussed this, you know, privately, as you said, that it almost feels as though when you watch the Spurs, and you can see it in different games. The Dallas game was obviously different. I think they turned it up quite a bit in the Dallas game. They didn't need to get out of third gear. I saw maybe 60-70% Spurs tonight. And the last time I can remember even confidently saying that, you know, you've heard me say several times, this year's team – it feels a lot like 2005. We have the height, we have the depth, we all around can play a very solid game. And in 2005, you know, I caught myself feeling several times, and by several, I mean, you know, half the games of the season, this team is really not in this. They're just toying with this whoever we're playing at that given time. And I really was overwhelmed by feeling that in the first part of the game with Golden State tonight is, you know, I made the comment, like you said, that the kitten and the ball of yarn, I feel like we're toying with a lot of these teams and just kind of yawning throughout the game, just trying to get through the first three quarters of the season.
Now, there's something about those previous teams that is very reminiscent as you watch of this year as well, and a lot of that has to do with I remember 2005 between 2005 and 2007 I just could not seem to see any of the beginnings of any games, you know the JRWlings running around and just dealing with actual life and family and kids and putting them to bed and turning on the game and seeing that they were already up by 15 and it was in the second quarter and going, wow, this is great. It's fun to watch a game that they're winning. But honestly, it would be nice to eventually see how they're actually getting these leads. And it seemed like it was like well into the season before I actually made that happen. Back then, just because they were blowing teams out so quickly, and it seems like this team's got a lot of those same qualities. The main quality that's the same, of course, would be Tim Duncan, and I know you've got some thoughts on exactly how he's playing and how he affects this team, even with maybe a more limited role. Why don't you talk about that?
One thing that really struck me watching this team the first 20% of this year is, you know, we've heard so much and we've heard so many national columnists talk about, you know, Tim Duncan in his twilight has really taken on the role of David Robinson and really kind of handed the reins over to other players on the team. I think I can see whiffs of that. I mean, obviously this is Tim Duncan's team. Obviously Tim Duncan is one of the greatest basketball players to ever put on a uniform. I think psychologically he's still the commander of this team.
Oh, yeah.
We see a lot of changes in the way he's playing the game this year. And you know, the comments I think I've made to you and the comments that I can't get past is David Robinson at this point in his career, it's an interesting parallel because – you know, a lot is made of the fact that David relinquished his control of the team and handed over kind of the reins to Tim Duncan, who was up and coming, who was rookie at that time, and it led them on to greatness. Well, the reality of the situation is, you know, David Robinson is a heart of gold, and I love David Robinson. He really didn't have much of a choice. I mean, he obviously could have been the stereotypical American athlete and been arrogant and kind of LeBroned his way excuse me for making a reference to the King in this podcast, but he could have held on to that, I guess, that leadership role. But I think physically he was incapable of doing that. He was physically in the twilight of his career. Mm-hmm. He was incapable of putting up the same numbers and carrying the team anymore. Tim was almost kind of a physical savior to him in that, you know, like I said, David just wasn't physically capable. I see Tim Duncan right now as being completely different than that comparison, because I believe firmly that Tim is still physically capable of dominating an NBA basketball game. I think Tim is still very much able to, you know, if we could bring up tonight's game, for example, the performances that Tim is capable of calling upon, that comparison just isn't appropriate. It's not the same. Tim is virtually non-existent this year. With the exception of one or two great performances, he's for the most part a bystander. Now,
when you say non-existent, you mean like statistically, like box score non-existent, right?
Exactly. Okay. I mean stats, box scores. I mean, you know, the double-double machine that we're known,
right?
Tim's known for. He's down from his career averages in the following categories: minutes, which we can explain very easily, points, rebounds, assists, and blocks. That's pretty much all of the categories there are. His minutes are down from a career average of just over 36 to just over 29. Like I said, we can attribute that directly to get off my lawn Popovich. His points are down from 21 to 14 this year. Now, nobody can deny, as I said, that it's still Tim Duncan's team and that he's still the leader in the franchise. But Tim Duncan, even at 20%, does more to influence and contribute to a game than you and I can even see.
Mm.
Yes, mathematically he's aged another year, but Tim Duncan's game is built for the longer careers that you see out of some big man. He learned early on to moderate his exertion because a career in the NBA could easily be, if chosen, a marathon and not a sprint. Wear and tear is taking place with mm-hmm. Timmy. If anybody out there is proficient at maximizing output while minimizing his physical input, it's Tim Duncan. Bottom line, I really don't see Timmy's current drop in production so much a result of age or fatigue as much as deliberate self-control and game management. Combine this knowledge and maturity with an even more heightened understanding by Pop of the trials of a full 82-game season and a willingness to hold Tim back, and where are we?
I love that. Deliberate self-control and pacing. And that's I can't agree with you more, because just watching the way that Tim has played at the beginning of this season, well, at the beginning of the last two seasons, maybe even go back three, at the beginning of last season, you know, he slimmed down in the summer. They thought that was going to be, you know, carry less weight. He'd be easier on his knees and everything. And he came out and he was having, I mean, I remember seeing stories at the beginning of last season about MVP type numbers and you know, all time efficiencies and all that stuff started to fall off right around midseason All-Star break. And of course he didn't exactly limp into the postseason, but he wasn't carrying the team like he was at the beginning. And this is now actually a trend that we see when we look back over the last three seasons or so, with him kind of wearing down at the end of seasons. And yeah, absolutely. If he can pace himself, and if we can have the beginning of his season towards the end, because he has, a run of a few games, like say maybe three games in a row where he averages something like 18 some odd minutes and maybe 8.5 points, like he already had this year, have a few games like that every dozen games, then yeah, I think that he's going to be far fresher. So I think that deliberate pacing that you were talking about is a great way to describe it.
But you know, look at it even compared to last year. Tim Duncan played the same way. He did the exact same thing. He paced himself. Pop paced himself. It was that deliberate self-control. We couldn't win without Tim Duncan putting a very heavy contribution and a signature on every single game. Well, where are we now? We're winning. Not just winning, but we're dominating in an extraordinarily deep year for the league without the greatest power forward to ever put on a jersey.
So,
we are literally running roughshod over the league without great assistance from Tim Duncan.
So we've talked about Duncan's place. We've talked about how he's willingly taken a back seat. So what's the difference between this fifth of the season versus last fifth of the season? What has changed between these two teams? You got some stats to back something up?
One person. There is one guy responsible for this change. It's Richard Jefferson. No doubt about it. Richard has somehow figured out a way to not only be a threat to drive the lane and to body up other players. I mean, when Richard put on a Spurs jersey, most of us were really excited thinking back to, you know, the early 2000s, thinking back to 2003 when we played him in the finals. He was a threat because he was very strong. He was very physical. He could drive the lane. But he could also, if you sagged off and prevented him from driving the lane, he could easily drain an outside shot. Last year, that Richard Jefferson was non-existent. Richard coming on in this way has enabled – I mean, there's no coincidence that Manu has – entered this state right now in which he's playing some of the best ball of his career. Same with Tony Parker. Richard Jefferson gives them that fourth option, that almost a role that Bruce Bowen somewhat filled, in that he was always reliable for that corner jumper. Mm-hmm. You couldn't double Manu and Timmy. You couldn't double Tony and Timmy because you had Bruce in the corner. Well, now with Jefferson, it provides an even more versatile attack because not only can he hit the corner jumper, he can drive past you and dunk the ball in the lane as well. So he has added a new dimension to Tim Duncan's game this year, and it's exciting. If you're a Spurs fan, you need to be overjoyed right now. Not at the record, not at the hype. You need to be overjoyed at the fact that not only, you know, is Tim Duncan resting and he's going to be in game shape for the playoffs when that rolls around, but what's going to happen in 60 games with this team we have now? We can win the most of those 60 games. And in 60 games, when Tim Duncan actually yawns and then finally puts the car in gear, I genuinely feel that we're a significant threat in the Western Conference this year, and I haven't felt that in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not just looking as though it's – well, I'm going on record now with a fifth of the season gone that I'm going to revise my expectations for the season. You talked earlier off the call about actually being in love with this year's team, that you finally got there. And before the season, I pretty much revised my expectations for the first time in years that it wasn't a championship. I think I'd have been happy just getting to the Western Conference Finals. The way the team's right. playing right now, I don't think that I have to go back to just my default setting for being a Spurs fan and expect and root for and hope for and want a championship this season. The way they're playing just precludes any other option, I think.
Well, I think every player has started to come around to the same JRW, resignation. I think each and every player has started to realize, you know, we've heard for years that Tim Duncan's getting old and he may not be around forever. And I think Manu, Tony, I think even Pop, there seems to be a greater sense of urgency this year. And I think it adds a lot more validity to the expectation of championship or bust. Because, you know, we would get in arguments last year about, you know, and I don't want to admit this as a diehard Spurs fan, but folks, the bottom line was we were not winning last year, period. The year before, we were not winning the year before, period. And if you're a realistic and a logical sports fan, you can look at that and go, you know,
Do you know any of those realistic and logical sports fans? That was just a quick aside. All right, right back to you.
They're all on Mavs Moneyball, I guess. Not exactly. I think that this year we legitimately can say, because right now we match up very well with the Lakers. The way our front line is, as deep as we are with bigs, with the addition of Tiago, with Bonner absolutely playing un-Bonner-like, we've just got a solid team this year. And like you said, we talked about another thing, that a point that I think you wanted to make is referring to fourth quarter execution. I've been amazed because last year we laughed and joked about it all year. We had this 3QC, this third quarter collapse that we always anticipated, that we joked about. I don't remember one third quarter collapse this entire year that we've had thus far.
You know, the team is causing other teams. Spurs are causing other teams to have third quarter collapses. And that without a doubt is really, really the difference in the 8-9, 9-8 start of last season through 17 versus 14-1 and a very good start of the 17th game. Whew, boy, I almost messed up there.
That's right.
But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the way that the defense is playing, it's a different kind of defense, but it's distancing themselves right out of the gate, starting the second half, and I have no idea what Pop and his team have done to make such a huge shift, because it's not like a coaching staff can get that better that fast. It's got to come down to talent and experience and the way that the team plays together. But it's not this it's not this station to station, half court offense, really great half court defense with everybody exerting themselves as hard as they can in order to make sure that we're limiting possessions. There have been some great stories and some posts on PTR recently just about the way that the team has changed. And yes, the style of play is different than it was virtually the entire run of Popovich and Robinson and Duncan. That's true. But what really stood out to me in the close games, the games that were still in play in the fourth quarter, was just the way that the team could meld the new style of play and the free-flowing, fast-breaking offense with amazingly efficient execution in the half court when necessary and just pull away from teams. In my recap of the Mavs game, when I went through and looked at the four games this season that were all in play moving into the fourth quarter, and we averaged 11 points better than those teams in all of those. It was 10, 11, 11, and 12, I think it was. That we had outscored, just looking at the fourth quarter in close games or in games that we were trailing going into the fourth quarter. And the only two losses we have were against, of course, the Hornets and the Mavs, and those were fourth quarters that we lost. Right. So we lose both of those games by a little bit in the fourth quarter in games that we weren't able to distance ourselves previously. And in the other four, we average an 11-point victory for that quarter. And that's not even a comparison to the way that they were playing last year.
Yeah. Well, and I think, not to get overly simplistic, but I think a lot of it, I mean, we are third in the league, third overall in points per game at 107.2 points a game.
It's crazy.
We're talking about the San Antonio Spurs right now. And we're talking about the Tim Duncan-led San Antonio Spurs. But I think that's emblematic. I told you earlier as well, if you look at the stats, what's astounding, and we can say 17 games because that counts tonight's game, but sticking with our 20% theme.
Let's go ahead and stick with the fifth. Yeah, let's do that.
Stick with the fifth. Yeah, we've put so much energy into that so far. In the 16 games that we've played to start this year, we've only had the game's high score in 9 of those games. And we've won 14 of them, but we've only had the game's high score in 9 of those games. But in rebounds and in assists, we've had the high rebound getter and the high assist getter in 13 of those 16 games. So what it tells you is obviously we're distributing the ball better and we're all shooting better. In all of those, if you look through all of our previous games, as you said, I mean, it relates to the style of play that's become a lot different. It comes down to nothing more than trusted shooters. It's fairly easy for one team to stop Manu Ginobili. But Manu Ginobili, when he has the ability to kick out to a George Hill, to a Brent Berry, to a Bruce Bowen, to a Robert Horry, to a Gary Neal, to a Matt Bonner, if those players are reliably and consistently hitting their shots, you cannot stop Manu Ginobili, and you can't stop the San Antonio Spurs. And this year, we actually see those other players, call it Chip England, call it off-season trade, call it whatever you want to call it, these players are actually hitting all of these outside shots. And it's changing our entire offense.
Yeah, it's just amazing the way that, say, the second half of the Hornets game, Manu wasn't just scoring points. He absolutely was. But so many of the highlights of that game and that second half for me was the way he was distributing the ball and the way that the offense was just clicking because everybody's passing the ball to was knocking down those shots. Yeah. Now it's really enjoyable not just watching the team perform like that, but the ease with which they're getting shots and points in whichever defense, whichever situation that they need to. And it doesn't really matter if they were playing the Bulls or the Magic. I mean the Magic. Yeah, I mean. I can't stop now. I've got to go straight into my top five, it would be the last five. Seeing this out,
last.
Yeah, it is the last five because we didn't. There's no last game to discuss, you know, when you only have, 1,728 seconds of a game. So I'm going to go to the, last five here and look at the Cavs, the Magic, the T-Wolves, the Mavericks, and the Hornets game, and just kind of give my thoughts on the last five. Cavs game, point differential by quarter. First quarter we lose by one. Second quarter we win by eight. Third quarter we win by seven. Fourth quarter we win by 10. And that's just a ton of winning garbage time and just a beat down that we put on a team that was completely outclassed. Duncan played just over 17 minutes, and the Spurs win by 24. Yes, please. Right. Yes, please. Let's have more of that. That was great. The Magic game. That fourth quarter was like watching, watching a thoroughbred pull away from a quarter horse, right? I mean, so they'll run together for a while, but after a while, that quarter horse is going to lose ground with every single stride, and that's exactly what happened in the fourth quarter. I don't think you got to watch that game, and we talked afterwards, and I was just glowing about their performance, and I think you finally come to feel about the team the way I did that night. And did you ever get to watch the replay of that game?
I did. And you know what struck me about both of those two games? You mentioned Cleveland and Orlando. Right. The two highest point getters in those games. We'll start with the Cleveland game first. The highest point getter, we won 116-92. Highest point getter in that game was Mo Williams. He had 21 points in the game. Well, what does that tell you when you look at the fact that obviously Mo Williams, you know, had 21 points. That was the highest point getter in the game. And in only nine of the games that we've played, we've had the highest point getter. We are distributing the ball and have such a balanced attack at scoring. You know, I had mentioned to you, I think earlier, I mentioned it to you or maybe C-Money that, you know, the highest point total we had scored against us this year thus far was Derrick Rose with Chicago. He had 33 mm-hmm. points. Who was the second highest point total in that Bulls game for Chicago? You can't tell.
No idea.
Because the Bulls rely completely on one or two players. San Antonio is different this year in that any number of players, we literally have a solid four that can lead us in scoring every single night, possibly five or six if we get career nights from a Bonner, a Blair, a Hill, mm-hmm. anything like that. It reminds me of, if you remember the middle of this decade, the Detroit Pistons.
Yep.
You could shut Rasheed Wallace down, but there was four other guys that would score in double figures against you.
Shoot, and you never knew when Rasheed Wallace was going to shut himself down.
Yeah, exactly right. He watching this team this year, though, it reminds me of those teams in the past. Balanced teams that you literally have to beat five guys every single night if you want to win versus the San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely true. All right, so number three of the last five would be the Minnesota game, which, it was a comeback. That was an ugly win as well. We had an amazing three-point barrage. But I think the key to actually winning that game, which Josh Geyer, that used to be completely Dick, just said that we had no business winning that game. We lost that game. I say you always win a game you win. And I think it really comes down to the mindset. This one comes down to the mindset of the Minnesota Timberwolves. After the game, Milicic said, we're thinking too much. We're just not enjoying playing basketball in the fourth quarter. It's like we're scared to win. I don't know why. We're up 20. Just keep playing. And when I thought about that, I thought about Manu's quote after that game when he said, I just didn't see us winning this game. You know, just didn't have the kind of urgency that you normally see on a team when they're coming back from a deficit like that. And I just think Manu's so experienced and, yeah. and the entire team is so experienced to be able to come back. You gotta get the sense that eventually they start to be like a dog that smells fear, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you can say it's a shark, it's smelling blood in the water, but I mean, I just keep on coming back to, you know, those dogs is you can tell when someone's afraid of you. It's like, oh, hello there. You got a 17-point lead, but you're not entirely sure of it, are you? No, you're not. In fact, you're scared? Really? Well, isn't that interesting? What happens to your play if I make this three? Oh, you throw that pass straight out of bounds. Wow, look at that. All right, how about this six-point run? Anything, you know?
You know, on that same note, though, Dale, another interesting point to add to that is it's been years since I felt as confident in watching a Spurs team that had a big lead on another team. If you remember last year, year before last, if we saw a Spurs team.
No lead was too big to lose.
No, 15, 20-point lead, I'm still not going home. Because we could blow this easily in a third or a fourth quarter collapse or even a first quarter collapse. Who knows? This year, I really feel a lot more confident as a fan watching this team. If they pull a 15-point lead, you know, I'm not going to mess with my own mojo here, but I just feel a lot more secure with leads with this team this year.
Oh, you know, and this isn't part of the last five, but the Utah game illustrated that to me because we never had that big lead that you're talking about. But virtually everybody that I've discussed it with, and tons of people on PTR with the comments, were always talking about how they never really felt like that game was in doubt. Right. I think up until the fourth quarter, you know, the largest lead of that game was like 8 points, maybe back and forth either way. And in a game that was that close, everybody just felt like the assumption was that they were going to that the Spurs were going to win, and that was just impossible last year.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right.
All right, so moving to the Mavs game now. I just got to say it's a loss. It's not always as much fun to talk about losses as wins, but in the long run, I think it really is better if Dallas as a team and Dirk specifically if they get comfortable with the idea that they can jump shoot their way to wins against us.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I have no problem with losing all regular season games to the Mavericks and having Dirk average 35 a game. I have no problem with it whatsoever because you can go ahead and get sucked right into Popovich's game and his mind toy of allowing you to believe that your outside shooters and your one-star player is going to beat us in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know what? Besides Los Angeles, I don't think there's any team besides Dallas – that brings out the CIA in Pop.
Yeah.
Right? I wouldn't be surprised at all if Pop's thought process was something like, sure, Dirk, go ahead, get used to those wide open shots against us. Yeah, they'll be there all season long. No need to get comfortable driving on us. Just keep fading away. You'll be fine.
I see Pop and Tim sitting in a basement and laughing about it and going, okay, and then you know what? We're going to let Dirk score 15 points straight, and we're going to look over at Mark Cuban as he's screaming and laughing and looking like a douchebag, and we're just going to nod our heads and hang our heads low as we walk out of the stadium, and then we're going to laugh all the way on the bus back to the plane because we know exactly how we're setting them up. Well, Dallas, they can hang that banner proud because that was the highlight of their year is that one win over us, and if they get another one, more power to them. Like I said, they can hang that banner proud. We're moving in a different direction now.
I love it. I love it. I couldn't agree more. Who knows what, but I can see it for sure. All right, and then the last of the last five is the second Hornets game, which was right now it's tough to tell whether the Hornets are the 11-1 team from their first 12 games or whether they're the 4-5 team of their last nine. Yeah, I know there's some overlap in those numbers. Just work with me. I mean, I expect them to come back to earth. I don't think they're the team from their fast start. I'm just not going to call it just yet.
Right. Yeah, they're going to. I'll tell you right now. There's not. They've been the recipients of a fairly favorable schedule, mm-hmm. and they have started off very, very well. I don't see them sustaining over the long haul. I'll be shocked if they sustain over the long haul.
All right. So, I'm going to ask for your prediction now. I want you to put yourself in the playoffs watching the Spurs play, and you tell me, are they playing the same style that they're playing now, or are we seeing the old Spurs going station to station and playing the old kind of defense and the old kind of offense? Essentially, is the team that we're watching now, is this the 2010-2011 Spurs team, or is this the regular season 2010 2011 team?
I've got two answers to your question.
Okay.
Who are we playing in the playoffs, though? You've got to preface that because Pop is a lot smarter coach than we're giving him credit for here. I'm not a small ball fan, and I know you're not an extremely large fan of small ball. A lot of talk has been made about, the Spurs have adopted the small ball. I mean, they're third in the league in offense right now. A lot of that is due to the small ball, and the small ball. I get tired of hearing this because, again, we are 16 games into the season. We're talking about Greg Popovich. Let's have this same conversation at game number 70, and let's see if it's even a viable point. I see Pop getting away with trying a lot of different lineups right now. This is the first time in as many years that we can actually play effectively with small ball because we've got consistent shooters and we've got guys that want to run and that are capable of running. Do I see that persisting throughout the playoffs? Do I see us getting through the playoffs, surviving on small ball? Absolutely not. You're going to see a steady diet of Dice, of Tim Duncan, of Blair, of Tiago. A lot of guys are getting concerned right now that they're not seeing a lot of Tiago time on the court. That's going to change. Playoffs hit, you're going to see a lot more of Tiago. Against a team like L.A., you just can't play small ball versus a team like L.A. Now, last year's Phoenix team, we can get away with playing small ball. I don't see the same style of play persisting, not to mention the fact that, going back to what I said earlier, we basically aren't utilizing Tim Duncan right now. We are dominating and winning the league, or we're winning games without the greatest power forward of all time for the most part.
Yeah, I think I got
the playoffs. That's not going to be happening.
Yeah, I think I got to agree with you. I think small ball is a means to an end.
Exactly.
I look at it a lot like a manager using a pitcher in middle relief that doesn't have a very good ERA. Okay, if you've got a 7-run lead and you need to chew up some innings, then, this guy's arm is better than your ace reliever in there that you do want to save when you need him. And as a means to an end, using the small ball lineups that Pop goes to, I think is just our youngest, freshest legs are on players that lend themselves to small ball lineups. The question I'm wanting you to consider, as much as you've answered that now, is also the fast breaking, the gambling a little bit more on defense. How much of that do you see making its way into the regular season?
I see a lot of that. You mean in the postseason?
Exactly.
I see a lot of that carrying through. I think a lot of that just comes down to basic hustle. Popovich has always been a coach that uses 82 games, similar to the way that Shaq uses 82 games to drop 170 pounds. Pop uses 82 games to test different lineups and to try different combinations. We know, and he knows, his staff knows firmly that Dice, Duncan, Manu, Tony, and RJ is going to work. Mm. He knows that that's going to work well in the playoffs. There's no reason to gel or to try that lineup out in the regular season. If you can get by with a lineup that's led by Gary Neal, and you can do that for 30 games, and you can win most of those 30 games, that's an added arrow in your quiver when you go into the postseason. I don't see that being our baseline. I don't see us relying on that. I do think, like you asked, I think a lot of the hustle stats, I think a lot of the sagging on defense to create fast breaks, a lot of that is basically moving that direction because that's the way the league is moving. And I see that continuing to the postseason as long as we don't wear ourselves out in the regular season.
All right. Works for me. Do you have any favorite moment or any particular CIA Pop moment that you want to talk about from the first fifth of the season that we get to discuss tonight?
It goes back to our private conversations. I really do believe, I think we're all happy to be, I'm trying to remember, we haven't played 17 games, we played 16 games. I think we're all happy to be 14-2. Pop is happy to be 14-2. He'd rather be 14-2 than 1-15.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think even if we were 1-15, he wouldn't give a rat's ass. As long as things are coming together, as long as it's always been a marathon. Mm. It's never been a sprint. You look at 95% of the teams in the league, the ones that aren't consistent winners, ironically, look at it as a sprint, not a marathon. And I don't think the fast, successful start we've gotten onto has meant anything to Pop. I'm tempering, as a longtime Spurs fan, I'm tempering my enthusiasm for such a hot start, for such a hot first fifth of the season, because I know very, very soon we're going to have a losing streak. It's something you can't avoid no matter how good you are. And I'm interested in seeing how Pop and the guys handle, you know, some downtime, because we're not going to be Bonner, Neal, all of these guys are not going to be as consistently hitting shots from the outside as they were to start this year. When we go through that dry spell, what's the character of this team? Can we pick ourselves up and get right back on track and handle that? Can we weather that storm?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's also good to know that you're not expecting Bonner to continue to shoot 80% from three-point land like he did in the first few games. That's great.
No. I think the one player – I mentioned RJ earlier. Who the hell is Gary Neal?
Oh, my
– You talk about falling in love with somebody. Wow. I love this kid.
It's not just the defense that we didn't know – that I had no idea that we would be getting with him. It's because I thought he was going to be – just a long-range gunner.
Right.
But he had I believe it was – I'm not even going to guess who it was. Maybe it was against Utah or Chicago. It was a few games back. He had a jab step, step back three that just reminded me of Manu. Yeah. And then a quarter later, he drove through the lane and laid this floater up off the glass that – I had to blink twice at to tell if it was Tony or not. And when you've got a guy on your team who's mimicking each of the best backcourt in the league, it's a good thing. I'm going to put a gold star next to Gary Neal's name for sure. That was just insane. I actually have a favorite random CIA pop from this first fifth. This first 20% of the season already, and mine is after the comeback win over the Timberwolves. Some reporter had the temerity to ask Pop about the streak, and Pop said, "I didn't even notice it. Every game is a game, and we don't even think about it. We'll lose our share. It will end like every other streak."
Yeah.
Do you know what happened in the game immediately after that question and that response? Yeah.
Coincidentally, we lost the game. That's what I'm talking about. Pop and everybody else are sitting in a basement going, "Screw you guys."
Yeah, coincidentally, a loss to the Mavs. So, absolutely. Also, well, if you've got nothing else to add, I'm done as well, and that can be the end of this, the first fifth of Spurs that we've served up. Thanks for sticking with us, Pounders, and we will see you on Pounding the Rock.